No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time on this Wednesday, April 18th, 2018. I'm David Brown, and it's great to have you with us. I've noticed something in the hours since hearing the news about the passing of Barbara Bush. To care about this story, you have to either have an appreciation of history or be of a certain age in which you lived through those Bush years, which is to say the late 80s and early 90s, and that would likely make you of a certain age. An age perhaps when one begins to look at the calendar more often and consider one's own relation to it. An age when one might make a conscious effort to soften disagreements with parents and contemplate making every moment left more precious, if there are any of those moments left. It's hard to imagine that a woman who reveled in the family nickname the Enforcer would want to be eulogized in some soft, gauzy way. So let's just say what is true. If you weren't a fan of Republican politics at the end of the century, Barbara Bush was, well, for you, a polarizing figure, one who could on occasion say things that would sound insensitive. And yet, perhaps it is a sign of the times that it seems the nation is for a moment coming together to celebrate, you know, her basic decency. A life lived by a sense of principles, fairness, and a belief in family first. Andrew Schneider of Houston Public Media has this remembrance.
Mrs. Bush was her husband's indispensable partner. The couple made their political debut virtually at the same time, when George Bush ran unsuccessfully for the Senate in 1964.
Both George and Barbara Bush campaigned hard during the week. On Sunday, however, they try to be with their children after church services at St. Martin's Episcopal Church, where Barbara teaches Sunday school.
Her work as an educator carried over into public life. She used her platform as First Lady to combat illiteracy. Julie Baker Fink, president of the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation, says Mrs. Bush's advocacy changed the conversation about the issue.
People know the name Barbara Bush. They have the utmost respect for the name Barbara Bush. And I won't discount the fact that her name and her legacy has been what has brought people together.
Mrs. Bush strove to avoid controversy, but in the spring of 1990, she found herself in a battle on the front page of the New York Times. Wellesley College invited the First Lady to speak at their commencement. Students at the Women's College protested, demanding a speaker whose achievements were independent from her husband's.
Now I know your first choice today was Alice Walker, known for the color purple. Instead, you got me, known for the color of my hair.
The First Lady weathered the storm and, in the end, delivered a speech that would become famous.
Somewhere out in this audience may even be someone who will one day follow in my footsteps and preside over the White House as the president's spouse, and I wish him well.
In between Nancy Reagan and Hillary Clinton, Barbara Bush brought her own priorities to the job of First Lady. Jean Becker served as Mrs. Bush's deputy press secretary during her White House years.
It's not really a job, it's just sort of an expectation.
Becker says Mrs. Bush navigated the expectation with discipline and grace. By putting her family first, and because of her refusal to color her hair, Barbara Bush was often called America's grandmother. She didn't love the title, but she earned it, especially during the Gulf War.
She decided she would travel all around visiting military bases where a lot of troops had been deployed. And I hate to tell her, she was America's grandmother because, oh my gosh, she spent hours hugging wives and husbands and children, and it was wonderful.
The future First Lady was born Barbara Pierce in 1925. She grew up in Rye, New York, a suburb of New York City. She met her future husband at a dance when she was 16, and the two quickly fell in love. Their marriage would span 73 years, longer than any other presidential couple in history. Her third son, Neil Bush, believes that her greatest legacy will be the love she shared with her husband.
She and my dad both set a great example for others how to be loving and committed husband and wife towards one another. And people, whether they knew it or not, they were being kind of led in a direction that was really positive for family.
George and Barbara Bush had six children. Their daughter Robin died of leukemia at age 3. In addition to Neil Bush, their surviving children include their sons George W., Jeb, and Marvin, and their daughter Dorothy. Mrs. Bush is one of only two women in American history to be both the wife and mother of presidents. In Houston, I'm Andrew Schneider for the Texas Standard.
Even many of us who were around at the time don't remember. Maybe it's because we pushed it out of our thoughts. But in the late 80s and early 90s, you could be fired if your employer discovered you'd done something like volunteering to work with AIDS patients. Acquired immune deficiency syndrome was, at the time, considered a death sentence. It was saddled with a stigma as a disease spread by drug users and gay men. Many Americans were afraid that just touching someone with AIDS could be deadly, despite assurances from public health officials, of course, that just wasn't true. Well, just after her husband's inauguration, Barbara Bush did something that is worth taking special note of on this day after her passing. Joining us now is Jeffrey Engel, director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University. He's author of several books, including When the World Seemed New, George H.W. Bush, and the End of the Cold War. Mr. Engel, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us on the Texas Standard.
Oh, always good to talk to you.
Take us back. It was 1989, and we're coming out of the Reagan years, in which Nancy and Ronald Reagan dared not even say the word AIDS. You know, they just avoided it completely. And then Barbara Bush made this a priority, and there was an event that happened in Washington?
Yes, and the way you described it is really critical, because this was a period where people thought that AIDS was not only a death sentence, but something that was highly contagious. And the Reagan administration, frankly, had done basically nothing, not only to remedy the problem and the health crisis, but to even address it. So in the first months of her being in the White House, Barbara Bush went to essentially a hospice where children and babies who had contracted HIV and AIDS were oftentimes left and abandoned by their parents and left simply to pass away. And Barbara Bush went and not only coddled some of the babies, not only, you know, kissed some of the babies, not only took care of some of the children and gave them just genuine human warmth, but more importantly, she allowed herself to be videoed and photographed doing that. And the image of the first lady of the United States holding to her chest a dying child really reworked the entire notion of AIDS for many people around the country. It was a revolutionary moment in how we think about that disease.
As I understand it, there was a volunteer who had helped set up this event, a volunteer named Lou Tesconi, who had been a part of this hospice in Washington. And somehow or another, the First Lady, Barbara Bush, got to know what his particular situation was. Do you know the backstory there?
Yes. Well, you know, Barbara Bush went more than once. You know, she went with cameras and then she went without cameras. This was really an issue that as a mother and a grandmother that she felt very, very strongly about. And while she was at the hospice at one point, one of the other young men who was also sick and unfortunately on his way to dying, said to her, "Mrs. Bush, I really genuinely appreciate what you're doing, and it's fascinating, but, you know, the entire country needs to know that we all need a hug and that we all need support from our friends and family." And this was a man who had largely been abandoned by his own family when it became known that he had contracted HIV/AIDS. And Mrs. Bush not only stood up at that very moment and hugged him, but made a big point of giving him a long and close hug while the cameras were rolling subsequently, and really, again, helped to move the conversation forward to a greater acceptance that, yes, this was a horrible disease, but the individuals who had it needed compassion and care just like any other sick person. It really was it's hard to recreate how profound that moment was 25 years later when people have changed their opinion on this disease.
Part of it was the moral judgmentalism, I think, at the time, because the country could see a child as being innocent, but maybe a grown man is not being innocent, as being somehow responsible for their own condition, right? That was part of the element here.
It's one of the few diseases where somebody would actually say, when they hear that a friend or an associate had fallen ill, the first question wasn't, "Oh my goodness, how are they doing?" The first question was, "How did they get it?" And there was a real sense in which people passed moral judgments over how someone had contracted this disease, whether it be through sexual contact, whether it be through using dirty syringe needles or different drugs, or as had often been the case, you could be born with it, as in the case of these babies, or you could get it if you had simply a blood transfusion. And so what Mrs. Bush did at that moment was really to demonstrate that the question of how did somebody contract the disease is really irrelevant when it comes to the simple, harsh human reality of facing someone who knows at that time that they're going to die and needs human comfort. And it was really, again, I think of all the stories about Barbara Bush that I've ever heard and ever researched, this is the one that touches me the most. It really was a genuine positive that a first lady could do for the entire country.
And in fact, she wrote later that it had changed her own way of thinking about the situation, given it more nuance, and she grew as a result as well. Jeffrey Engel is director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University, author of several books, including When the World Seemed New, George H.W. Bush and the End of the Cold War. Dr. Engel, thanks so much for speaking with us on the Texas Standard.
Thank you indeed.